A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been setting up the new apartment, and he's noticed something about the way small orders arrive. You need a dozen specialist parts from a dozen online stores, and each one becomes its own pickup trip. For a business ordering like that every week, that's not an inconvenience. It's a labor cost. So he's asking whether a service exists that acts as a receiving point, holds the deliveries, consolidates them, maybe onto a pallet, and then either lets you do one weekly run or does a periodic last mile drop to your place of business. His questions are simple. Does this have a name? Does anybody offer it? And what does it cost?
The answer is layered. The service he's imagining exists, but it's split across two industries that barely speak to each other. Consumer package forwarding does the receive, hold, consolidate, reship flow. Freight consolidation does the pallet and terminal work. Neither one does what Daniel wants for a domestic small business.
So we have three questions and an answer that's really about why nobody's glued the pieces together.
Right. And the reason isn't that it's hard. The mechanism is thoroughly solved. It's that the person who benefits from consolidation isn't the person who pays the carrier. And that inversion breaks the market signal.
Let's start with what exists. The consumer package forwarding model. ForwardMe and a whole cluster of services like it give you a warehouse address, usually in the country where you're buying from. Packages arrive, they go into your personal locker or account, and they sit there until you trigger a consolidation. The service then repacks multiple boxes into one shipment and forwards it to you.
And the repacking is the core value. International shipping is priced per parcel, so if you've got six small orders from six different sellers, you're paying six separate international shipping charges. Consolidate them into one box, one shipping charge, plus a repacking fee. The fee is trivial compared to the savings because the per parcel international cost is so high.
That's the economics that make the model work. Per parcel international shipping is expensive enough that a repacking fee of a few dollars per package still leaves you well ahead.
And the storage windows are built in. Most of these services give you 30 to 90 days of free storage, then a daily fee after that. They're not trying to be a warehouse. They're trying to be a staging point that nudges you toward consolidating and shipping.
So Daniel's instinct is right. The mechanism he wants, receive, hold, consolidate, reship, is a real product. But the use case is cross-border e-commerce. A customer in, say, Ireland, buying from American retailers who don't ship internationally, or who charge absurd rates for it.
And here's the thing. That model assumes international shipping economics. The moment you move it domestic, the savings collapse. Within one country, carriers already move parcels cheaply point to point. If you're a business in Jerusalem ordering from three domestic suppliers, each supplier already ships to you directly for a few dollars. Consolidating those three parcels into one doesn't save you much on shipping, because the shipping was never the expensive part.
The expensive part is the trip, the recipient's time, driving to a pickup point, waiting, signing, driving back. That's the cost Daniel's trying to eliminate. But the forwarding model doesn't price recipient time at all. It prices shipping. So the value proposition doesn't translate.
And it's worth being precise about why. In the international case, the buyer is paying both the shipping and the trip cost. The trip cost is high, but the shipping cost is much higher, and consolidation attacks the shipping cost. In the domestic case, the shipping cost is already low, and the trip cost is the whole game. A service that only attacks shipping cost is solving a problem the domestic buyer doesn't have.
So that's one half of the landscape. The other half is freight. Less than truckload, LTL, networks. Those do pallet-level consolidation as their entire business model.
This is where it gets interesting structurally. An LTL carrier runs local pickup routes. Small trucks go around collecting shipments that are too big for parcel carriers but too small to fill a whole trailer. They bring everything back to a regional terminal. At the terminal, shipments get sorted and consolidated onto line haul trailers, the big trucks that run between cities. At the destination terminal, they get broken down and put on local delivery trucks for the final leg.
So consolidation is the core of the LTL model. The terminal is the consolidation point. That's literally what it's for.
Right, and it works beautifully for outbound distribution. A manufacturer ships 20 pallets to 20 different buyers. The LTL carrier picks them all up, consolidates them with other freight heading the same direction, and delivers each one. The shipper pays per pallet, per mile, per weight. The consolidation happens in the network.
But Daniel's scenario is the reverse flow. He's not shipping out to 20 buyers. He's receiving from 20 suppliers. The freight networks are built for outbound distribution from sellers to buyers, not inbound collection from many suppliers to one recipient.
That's the key insight. The direction is wrong. Freight consolidation networks collect from few points and distribute to many. Daniel needs collection from many points and distribution to one. The terminal logic can technically run in reverse, but the pricing, the routing, the whole operational apparatus is oriented the other way.
So we've got two models. Consumer forwarding solves the receive, hold, consolidate flow, but assumes international shipping economics. Freight solves pallet-level consolidation, but assumes outbound distribution. Neither one faces Daniel's direction.
And that's why he can't find it by searching. He's looking for a name service, and the name doesn't exist because the product doesn't exist as a single bundled offering. What exists is pieces.
Let's talk about the delivery point model, because that's the piece Daniel said he's seen, but not for domestic e-commerce.
Parcel lockers and retail pickup points. They solve a real problem, which is missed delivery. A carrier attempts delivery, you're not home, the package goes to a locker or a corner shop, you pick it up when convenient. That's a genuine improvement over the package going back to a depot or, worse, being left on a doorstep.
But it doesn't solve the many trips problem. Each package still requires a separate trip to the point. The locker doesn't consolidate across carriers or sellers. If you've got a package from one carrier in a locker and a package from another carrier at a retail point, those are two trips.
And the network has no consolidation logic. The locker treats each parcel as an independent item. There's no mechanism for holding a parcel until your other parcels arrive. No concept of a weekly batch. The system is optimized for secure receipt, not for aggregation.
So Daniel's observation is correct. Delivery points exist, but they're solving a different problem. They're an upgrade from never receiving packages at all, not an upgrade from making too many trips.
And that distinction matters because it's easy to look at a locker network and think, well, that's almost what I want. It's a point where packages wait for me. But the waiting is incidental. The locker isn't waiting for your other packages. It's waiting for you. The consolidation step simply isn't in the system.
Let's get to the structural question. Why hasn't anyone bridged this gap?
The market signal is inverted. That's the core of it. When a carrier delivers a parcel, the sender pays. The sender chose the carrier, the sender paid the rate, the sender's account is on the shipment. The recipient's costs, their time, their trips, their labor, don't appear anywhere in the pricing, so the carrier has no incentive to optimize for the recipient's trip count. The carrier is paid per parcel, and consolidation would reduce the number of parcels, which would reduce the carrier's revenue.
Put bluntly, the person who would benefit from consolidation isn't the person who pays the carrier. So the market never gets the signal that consolidation is valuable.
Right. And that's not a failure of imagination. It's a structural feature of how parcel pricing works. The sender is the customer. The recipient is the delivery address. Anything that makes the recipient's life easier but doesn't reduce the sender's shipping cost is invisible to the market.
Now the palletization piece. Daniel mentioned it as a nice to have. Consolidate the week's deliveries onto a pallet. Load it once, go.
Pallet level consolidation requires volume, warehouse space, and handling equipment. A pallet jack, a stretch wrap machine, a loading dock, or at least a level surface. The threshold where that makes sense is higher than a small business's weekly inbound volume. If you're receiving 10 small parcels a week, you're not filling a pallet, you're filling a tote bag.
And the fixed costs of even a modest consolidation point are real. You need space, someone to receive packages, someone to log them, someone to stack the pallet. Those costs only amortize at volumes that small businesses don't generate.
This is why freight consolidators serve manufacturers and distributors. Those businesses ship and receive enough volume that the pallet is the natural unit. A small office ordering UPS cables and brackets and specialist screws is working in parcel units, not pallet units. The two worlds don't overlap.
So who's closest to offering what Daniel wants? Third-party logistics providers, 3PLs.
A 3PL will do receiving, storage, and consolidated shipping. That's their business. You send your inventory to their warehouse, they store it, they pick and pack orders, they ship. For a business with ongoing inventory, that's a solved problem.
But the pricing model assumes a warehouse relationship. Monthly storage per pallet position, plus per receipt fees, per pick fees, per handling charges. It's priced for ongoing inventory management, not for casual weekly pickups of small parcels.
Right. The minimum commitment alone kills it for Daniel's use case. A 3PL wants a monthly contract, a storage footprint, a predictable flow. They're not set up to receive 6 random parcels a week from 6 random suppliers and hold them until Friday. The per receipt fee would eat any savings.
And the last mile variant Daniel mentioned, the delivery point that does a periodic run to your business. Some courier and freight companies offer scheduled delivery windows or milk run collection routes, but those are priced for predictable volume.
Milk runs are interesting. A truck follows a fixed route on a fixed schedule, collecting from or delivering to multiple stops. That's a real operational pattern, but it works when the volume is predictable. The route is planned around a known set of stops with known volumes. Daniel's inbound flow is irregular. Different suppliers, different volumes, different weeks. A milk run doesn't fit irregular flow.
So let's synthesize. The service Daniel wants exists in pieces. A 3PL will receive and hold. A freight forwarder will consolidate and palletize. A courier will do scheduled runs. But no one bundles those pieces for the small business domestic case.
And the reason is the addressable market. The customers who need this are diffuse. Small businesses scattered across every city, each generating maybe a dozen parcels a week. The per-customer revenue is tiny. But the fixed costs of a warehouse network, receiving staff, consolidation systems are enormous. The math doesn't work.
The person who benefits isn't the person who pays, and the fixed costs only amortize at volumes small businesses don't generate. That's the whole story. It's not that nobody's thought of it, it's that the economics don't close.
I want to be careful here because it's easy to say, well, someone should just build it. But the structural barriers are real. The carrier has no incentive. The 3PL has the wrong pricing model. The locker network has the wrong logic. The freight network has the wrong direction. Every existing player is optimized for something adjacent, but not this.
What Daniel's actually asking for is a new category. A service that treats inbound small parcel consolidation as the product, not as a side effect of something else. And that category doesn't exist, because the market hasn't found a way to price the recipient's time.
Which is, when you think about it, a strange market failure. Recipient time is a real cost. A business paying someone to make 6 pickup trips a week is paying real money. That cost is just invisible to the carriers because it doesn't flow through their billing.
It's the same dynamic as business email. The sender's convenience is priced. The recipient's attention isn't. So, we get spam.
That's a good parallel. The cost lands on the person who didn't choose the transaction. In logistics, the recipient didn't choose the carrier, didn't choose the shipping method, didn't choose the delivery point. But the recipient pays the trip cost. The market doesn't see it.
Daniel's question, does anybody offer this? The honest answer is no, not as a single product, but every piece exists, and a motivated business could assemble them.
That's worth being concrete about. If Daniel or a listener actually wanted this, the path is to call a local 3PL and ask about a receiving-only arrangement. Some will do it. You'd pay a monthly fee for a small storage footprint, a per-receipt fee for each package logged, and you'd pick up weekly. It won't be cheap, but it exists.
Or you find a freight forwarder who'll do consolidation as a service. They receive your parcels, hold them, palletize when there's enough volume, and either you collect or they arrange a local delivery. Again, priced for business accounts, not casual use.
The pallet piece specifically. If you're receiving enough volume to justify a pallet, you're probably already working with a freight forwarder. The pallet is their unit. They'll happily receive, consolidate, and deliver pallets. but the minimum volume to make that sensible is higher than most small businesses generate.
Let me put a number on that, roughly. A standard pallet holds maybe half a cubic meter to a cubic meter of goods, depending on how it's stacked. If you're receiving small parcels, you'd need dozens of them to fill a pallet. Most small businesses receive a handful a week.
The handling cost per parcel at a 3PL, just the receiving and logging, is typically a few dollars per package. If you're paying $3 to receive a package that contains a $5 cable, the economics are already questionable.
That's the threshold problem in a sentence. The service only makes sense when the value of consolidation exceeds the handling cost. For high-value or high-urgency shipments, consolidation is the wrong answer anyway. For low-value, non-time-critical shipments, the handling cost eats the savings.
Daniel's use case, non-time-critical deliveries, one weekly run, is exactly the sweet spot where the service should work, but the per-package handling cost is the killer. A business receiving 10 parcels a week would pay maybe $30 a week in receiving fees at a 3PL plus storage plus the trip. That's real money for what's fundamentally a convenience.
The convenience has real value. The business is paying someone to make 6 trips. If consolidation cuts that to 1 trip, the labor savings might be $20 or $30 a week. So the 3PL fees roughly cancel the savings. The service exists but doesn't pay for itself.
That's the honest answer on cost. It exists, but at a price point that roughly cancels the benefit, which is why most small businesses don't use it. They eat the trips.
Or they hack around it, which I suspect is where most of the actual solutions live.
A clipboard and a loading dock.
Go on.
Early 2000s, I ran an electronics repair shop. Small place. I was ordering parts from 8-9 suppliers. Capacitors from one place, connectors from another, transformers from a third. Every week, 8 or 9 packages, 8 or 9 trips to the post office or the courier depot.
That's exactly Daniel's scenario.
I knew a man who owned a plumbing supply business 2 streets over, had a loading dock, a guy in the back who signed for deliveries all day. I asked if I could send my parts there. He said, fine, $20 a week and a case of beer on Fridays.
That's the whole service.
The dock guy logged my packages on a clipboard. He'd stack them in a corner by the door. Friday afternoon, I'd drive over with a hand truck, load everything into the van, hand over the beer. 10 minutes, 1 trip.
The dock guy was already there signing for plumbing supplies. Your packages were marginal.
The dock, the labor, the receiving process, all already paid for by the plumbing business. My $20 and the beer were pure profit for him. For me, it was the difference between 8 trips and 1.
The service existed. It was just unpriced, or priced in beer.
It worked for 3 years. Then the warehouse owner sold the building. The plumbing business moved. My system collapsed overnight. I was back to 8 trips a week until I found another arrangement.
That's the risk. The informal arrangement has no redundancy. It's one person, one relationship, one building. When any piece changes, the whole thing vanishes.
The thing is, every small business I knew had something like this. A friend at a print shop who'd take packages, a cousin who worked at a depot, a supplier who'd hold things for pickup. Everyone had patched something together. Nobody ever thought of it as a service. It was just how you got by.
The market's answer to this gap is the informal economy. Favors, relationships, cash, and beer.
That's why nobody builds the formal version. The people who need it have already solved it. Badly, maybe, with no redundancy and no guarantees, but solved it. The customer base for a formal service is people who haven't yet found a friend with a loading dock.
Which is a real population. New businesses. Businesses that just moved. Businesses whose informal arrangement just collapsed. But it's a diffuse, hard-to-reach population.
The moment their need becomes acute, they find a new friend with a loading dock. The informal market absorbs the demand before a formal provider can get established.
The service Daniel's imagining doesn't exist as a product because it exists as a relationship, and relationships don't show up in market research.
The clipboard was the whole system. I still have it somewhere. It's in a box with the old soldering gear.
The clipboard as the database, the dock as the warehouse, the beer as the payment. It's a complete logistics operation with none of the overhead.
None of the scalability. Which is exactly the point. The informal solution works at the scale of one business and one dock. It doesn't scale to 100 businesses because the relationship doesn't scale.
The plumbing supply guy didn't want 100 businesses sending him packages. He wanted $20 in beer from one guy he knew. The moment you formalize it, you have to charge real money, and then the economics stop working.
That's the trap. The informal version works because it's subsidized by the host business's existing operations. The dock, the labor, the space, all already paid for. The formal version has to pay for those things itself, and then the price exceeds the value.
The gap persists because the only version that works economically is the one that can't be sold.
I don't know that anyone's going to solve that. The numbers don't work unless you're doing it as a favor.
That raises the question Daniel was really asking. Not just does this exist, but will it ever exist? As e-commerce B2B platforms grow, as small businesses order more online, does the volume eventually cross the threshold where a formal consolidation service becomes viable?
The volume is growing. More small businesses are ordering from more online suppliers every year. But the volume is growing at the level of individual businesses, not at the level of a single consolidation point. 100 businesses, each receiving 10 parcels a week, is 1,000 parcels. But they're scattered across the city. No single point sees enough volume to amortize.
Unless the consolidation point is virtual. A network of existing businesses, like Hilbert's plumbing supplier, coordinated by a platform. But then you're back to the informal economy just with an app.
The app has to solve the trust problem, the liability problem, the insurance problem. The moment you formalize the beer arrangement, you inherit all the costs that the informal version avoids.
The beer was the liability waiver.
There's the episode's thesis in four words.
Daniel's service has a name, sort of. It's called inbound consolidation, or receivable consolidation, or delivery point consolidation. But the name exists in industry jargon, not as a consumer-facing product category. And the cost, when you can find it, roughly cancels the benefit.
The closest thing to what Daniel wants is a conversation. Call a local 3PL, ask about a receiving-only arrangement, call a freight forwarder, ask about consolidation, call a courier, ask about scheduled collection. Somewhere in those three conversations is a version of the service. Price for a specific business is volume.
If that fails, find a friend with a loading dock.
Which is, apparently, the actual market solution. Logistics solves problems at scale, and the gap is always the middle. The volume that's too small for freight and too large for parcel. The business that's too big for the informal economy and too small for a warehouse contract. That middle is where the interesting problems live, and where the market's answers are messiest.
Daniel's question was whether this exists. The answer is that it exists in pieces, it exists informally, and it exists in the gap between two industries that each solved half of it. What doesn't exist is the bundled product, and the reason is structural. The person who benefits doesn't pay, and the person who pays doesn't benefit.
Until someone finds a way to price the recipient's time, that's where it'll stay. In the gap, on a clipboard, paid for in beer.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for producing.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.